big news the last week here in New York was that thousands of people in a somewhat spontaneous protest did a solidarity march from Union Square late last week, and there were upwards of 200 arrests, signaling a change in the NYPD's strategy following the Eric Garner protests. As many of our listeners participated in and were aware of, throughout the fall, there was a sustained pressure to try and receive some kind of justice in the NYPD killing of Eric Garner in Staten Island, and that was not forthcoming. Though what was interesting is, in a departure from the Bloomberg years, it appeared that the NYPD and the current city administration were allowing protesters to kind of take the streets. People marched through the bridges, they marched through all the boroughs of the city, and did not until roughly the end of those protests receive sharp rebuke from the government. Yet this last week, when protests picked up again in the aftermath of the Baltimore uprising, the NYPD adopted a very aggressive strategy and began arrests as soon as people stepped out from Union Square, which continued throughout the evening as the protests split and moved downtown and uptown. So we're going to be joined shortly, if not right now, by Martin Stoller, who is a long-standing movement attorney with the National Lawyers Guild, former chair of the New York City chapter, and a member of the Mass Defense Committee. He was one of the original litigants in the Hanshoe Agreements, which, following the 1970s, were agreements that would stop the functioning of an NYPD Red Squad, what they called it. And he'll explain what that means and what the current status of rights is in the city. Are you on the air now, Martin?
I am indeed.
Good morning, and welcome to the morning show on WBAI. We appreciate you getting up so early to join us.
Well, my pleasure to be here.
Well, the particular thing that we were bringing you on about was the New York Times had an article just the other day written by Colin Moynihan, which was discussing police interrogations of those arrested during the Eric Garner protest. Now, of course, police genuinely interrogate people they've arrested, but what would have made this series of, I guess, political interrogations distinct and of concern to our listeners?
The rules under which the New York City Police Department operates restrict the methods and the means by which they can gather information about political activity. And what happened with this most recent questioning is that this is an investigation of political activity, but it had absolutely no basis in criminal conduct. What Hanshoe does and what the rules that were established by the Hanshoe case do is they don't say that the police cannot investigate crime. The rules say if there's a crime that you're investigating, go ahead and do it. That's what you're supposed to do. The rules also say you cannot investigate political activity. That is prohibited by the First Amendment. However, where an investigator claims that there is a mix of political activity and criminal activity, that kind of investigation can only be done through the intelligence division of the police department, and it's subject to certain restrictions about having a reason to commence an investigation, restrictions on the length of investigation, and restrictions on methods of investigation. Under these circumstances, this investigation that Colin Moynihan reported on was done not by the intelligence division, but was done by apparently a bunch of detectives. At least that's what the Deputy Commissioner for Legal Affairs has said. It was the detective division, which is a total violation of the Hanshoe guidelines. It's clearly an investigation of political activity, interrogating people about their use of social media, their plans for future protests, who organized this, and how could they get on a list for other demonstrations. That's an investigation of political activity. It was not conducted by the intelligence division, and it was not conducted with any kind of criminal predicate for the questioning. So we, at this point, the Hanshoe lawyers, have pretty much determined that there was a violation of the Hanshoe guidelines, and we will be writing a letter to the police department, the commissioner of police, and to the corporation council saying, hey, look, you people have violated the guidelines. You better stop doing it, or we're going to be moving to hold you in contempt of court for violating the court order, that says you can't do this sort of stuff.
Sure. This is a recent particular case. You've also been involved, if I can ask, in some of the issues around what they were calling the mosque crawlers, where they had NYPD units that were specifically entering into Islamic religious institutions over the last few years. Are you able to speak about that or the status of those cases?
There were revelations that came through a series of articles by the Associated Press and other sources that indicated that the police department in the post-9/11 era has been investigating Muslims merely because they're Muslims. That is, the mindset of the police department was that if anybody is practicing the religion, they are potentially going to be a terrorist. Therefore, they thought that they had the license to investigate every member of every mosque, anybody who was involved with the religion. And that is where the mosque crawlers and other forms of surveillance of the Muslim community with the use of undercover agents and confidential informants was revealed. We brought an action under the Hanshu guidelines, and also a separate lawsuit was commenced in Brooklyn. You're investigating a religion, you're investigating political and religious activity without a criminal basis, and the fact that somebody is Muslim is not a basis to commence an investigation of them. The police department said, okay, wait a minute, let's talk about this. So we are now in the process of negotiating a resolution of how to stop the kind of surveillance that the police department has been using of the Muslim community, but the police department insisting that there are certain kinds of criminal activity that they believe they have the right to investigate. And so we are involved currently in negotiations to try to resolve that. And they've been going on for several months. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm restricted in being able to speak about the progress of those negotiations.
Marty Stoller, I was going to ask you, were there any restrictions for other groups of religious bent, such as, local militia groups? Was their investigation broad enough to look into that?
Well, we don't know. We don't have access to all the internal documents and all the investigations that the police department is conducting. However, what came out was clearly a focus on the Muslim community, and that is a result of 9/11. The guidelines that we talked about that restrict what the police department can do, in 2002, when the police department got a new deputy commissioner for intelligence who had been trained by the CIA, he was made the commander of the intelligence division. And he came into court in 2002 and said, look, given the terrorism, given what happened on 9/11, we cannot investigate terrorism with these guidelines. And he wanted the guidelines completely wiped away. He wanted all restrictions on the police department's investigation of political and religious activity wiped out. We fought against that and ultimately succeeded in loosening up the guidelines, but keeping the guidelines in place so that there still must be some form of a criminal predicate in order to investigate political or religious activity. Those guidelines still existed even after 2002 and the police department's effort to wipe the guidelines out completely. So now guidelines are in place. They're a little bit loosened up because of what we understood the judge was going to rule, that maybe the police department could do this. So we settled to keep the guidelines in place.
And also regular use of social media by police as part of general investigations of, which they've admitted to. Do the Hanshu agreements have any bearing on the police going through people's social media accounts or doing general intelligence on public political affairs that aren't necessarily criminal?
Well, there are two questions that you asked. One is the photographing and videoing of people involved in demonstration activity. That is not allowed unless the police department is filming criminal activity. So they're merely marching in a parade, marching in a protest, being present at a rally is not a sufficient basis for the police department to take your picture. If you are allegedly engaged in criminal activity, such as we've recently seen walking in the street as opposed to walking in the sidewalk, then the police department is allowed to take those pictures. The other question you asked about social media has to do with the police department's ability to investigate things that are out in the public. The police department is allowed to read newspapers. They're allowed to read magazines. They're allowed to read anything that's put out in public. So for sure, the police department monitors what all of us citizens put out on social media. If we put it out for the general public and put it out for everybody to see, then the police department is allowed to look at it. However, what they do is they look at the social media, and if they find on social media that somebody is saying, I am planning to commit a crime, that may give them a basis to commence an investigation beyond merely looking at what is out there publicly. They can then commence an investigation. Be careful what you post on social media because the police department is looking at it. You put it out in public, it's going to be scrutinized by the police, by the FBI, and by your friends and by your enemies. Wow. So people should be careful about what they post.
Well, we should always be thoughtful in any case. Definitely. Well, one thing is the Mass Defense Committee of the National Lawyers Guild has been on the scene for many, many years, providing legal assistance to a variety of social movements, particularly where people take independent activity and often face criminal sanction just for protesting. There's been back and forth on how the police treat people who are engaging in public demonstration. During the Giuliani years, it got very, very sharp, where protest itself was almost criminalized. And the introduction of metal pens and what during Occupy people called felt control, right? That's to say that whenever people attempted to autonomously engage in politics, the police would show up and handle you, so that to enter a protest was to enter a zone of felt control by the police. And there was hope that under de Blasio, some of the draconian measures like that would ease off.
The best example I can give you is during the Occupy Wall Street. The police department was extremely aggressive under Michael Bloomberg.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much anybody who walked in the street was subject to being arrested. People who occupied Zuccotti Park were subject to being arrested merely because they were present in Zuccotti Park. And we saw extremely aggressive policing of Occupy and about 3,000 arrests during the few months that the police department and the activists were really doing stuff.
In New York City.
In New York City, 3,000 arrests in New York City, about 90% of which we wound up getting dismissed, which clearly says that there was something wrong with all the arrests that took place. When the Garner demonstrations began under de Blasio, we saw a little loosening of the way the police covered in demonstrations. People were allowed to walk in the street. Marches took place in various venues where there were no permits, and the police department facilitated those demonstrations, stopped traffic, and allowed the demonstrators to go forward. In the most recent demonstrations, there seems to be a change. People were rallying in Union Square with permits. As soon as they stepped out of Union Square and started marching on 17th Street, the police department got extremely aggressive with the protesters, surrounded them, and started grabbing people out of the street and sometimes on the sidewalk merely for being participants in the protest. And we saw about 150 arrests, most of them for conduct which a few months before had not been criminalized. So there seems to be a bit of a difference. Bratton, the police commissioner, and de Blasio, the mayor, have sort of announced, yes, we're taking a slightly different tack here. And what it does is it puts people who are involved in nonviolent political activity at risk of being arrested and being subject to being put in jail, going through the system, or certainly being taken into custody and handcuffed and given a ticket for an appearance in the future.
Where can the National Lawyers Guild be found online?
The National Lawyers Guild in New York can be found at nlgnyc.org. The guild has been for at least since the late 60s, been providing legal observers for people who are involved in demonstrations and organizations, and also providing legal support, jail support, and the lawyers who represent people who get arrested And I'm one of those lawyers, and I've been doing it for probably 45 years.
Right. It's a life to be proud of, and you are, people are grateful for the service. Anyone who ever sees those green hats at a protest here in New York or around the country, those are legal observers, often trained by the National Lawyers Guild, who attempt to both keep an eye on policing methods, observing how it happens, act as neutral observers of political protests, and as Martin Stoller said, the National Lawyers Guild also steps forward many, many times, not just here in New York, but around the country, to assist in protecting our democratic rights. And that is a profound service. Thank you very much, sir. And we hope to hear more about how the resolution of the cases involving Muslims and political policing generally plays out in the coming months. Thank you so much, Mr. Stoller.
My pleasure. Thank you.